Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're going to be down at Fadley's on Fridays all season long. Luke joined me on Friday for a crab cake down there. Also was joined by the owner of Medium Rare in the Rotunda, telling a beautiful Mother's Day story that you'll hear here this week, as well as my love of French cooking and steak and potatoes and salad. I'm going to take Luke down to Medium Rare, get him a steak one day. Our friends from the Maryland Lottery gave me these Pac-Man scratch-offs. We had a lot of winners. Had conventioneers from San Francisco running amok down at the Lexington Market, running off with $2 of John Martin's money from the Maryland Lottery. We'll be doing it all week long here and having some fun as we kick off some new games as well. Our friends at Jiffy Lube, MultiCare, an annual sponsor now with us. I got to get me a Jiffy Lube shirt. I'm going to start wearing it on the air here. I don't like doing hats so much because of the, messes up my face. But also our other friends here at Liberty Pure Solutions keeping my water clean. So Luke Jones joins us now. Luke, I'm loopy. Anybody that sees me on social media knows that I did something really crazy. Probably the craziest thing. My wife and I were trying to think like craziest stuff we've done in 22 years of marriage. Running off to see the Northern Lights. You did not see the Northern Lights in Shrewsbury on Friday night, I take it.
No, too cloudy, too cloudy.
Yeah, I had the same problem. I woke up and several times in the middle of the night, it did not happen. So we went to Spokane, Washington, searching the Northern Lights. And I'm going to let folks go out to my columnist at Baltimore Positive a little later on in the week as I put the finishing touches on that. As I was putting the finishing touches on that and flying back and forth and chasing the world's greatest natural phenomenon that only happens at polar opposite ends of the world, unless you're in Florida or Texas where you saw it this week. We're watching baseball all weekend. Jordan Westberg winning games, being a part of what's going on here in a way that this time last year we're like, let's make room for him. Is he a second baseman? Is he a third baseman? He's a Major League Baseball player. He gets lost in Rutschman and Henderson and all the fervor around Jackson Holliday, who's still in Norfolk. We have a new emerging hero, and I've compared him to Rich Dower. So far, so good.
He's been outstanding. I mean, he has been – Gunnar Henderson's our MVP, right? Gunnar Henderson is an MVP candidate across baseball, across the American League. But he has been their second-best player. I mean, I don't know how you could argue otherwise other than just, okay, Adley Rutschman gives you the intangibles and face of the franchise kind of argument. And it's not as though I don't say that to be disparaging to Rutschman or Colton Cowser, who had an unbelievable 2 weeks and, you know, it's making adjustments and hasn't been all bad, but certainly has come back down to earth. But Jordan Westberg has just been so consistent. And you look at where he was last year, to your point, at this time last year, he was nearing his major league debut. It was a little over a month away at this point last year, but he was someone that throughout his minor league career, and understanding this is one of the guys that had his minor league career disrupted by COVID and just how the weirdness of that for a year or two, especially on the minor league level. But he hit at every level. He hit for power at every level. He showed versatility at every level. Although he primarily played shortstop in the minor leagues. So it just speaks to the kind of player that they've drafted. That they've wanted guys up the middle, catchers, shortstops, and center fielders, because then you can move them off that position. And typically they can handle it. So he's just developed. And we saw last year a solid player, someone who didn't overwhelm you, but it's not as though he looked overwhelmed or out of place, or that it was too big for him or anything like that. He just didn't show a lot of power, right? Although if you look at the peripheral numbers and you dive deeper, you know, he had 17 doubles. You know, that was something that looked like, okay, you know, some of those doubles will start turning into home runs. And I mean, that's what we're seeing. You know, we're seeing a guy who has hit for power. We've seen him hit consistently. You know, he's drawn walks. Not that he's a major on-base percentage guy just in terms of walks, but he's willing to draw walks. And he has just been rock solid for them. Now, to your point, whether it's playing second base or third base, he looks good at both spots. You know, not perfect, but looks very capable, you know, rock solid to above average at either defensive spot. And I mean, he's been their second best player. I'm not sure there's much of an argument against that other than just, okay, Adley Rutschman, just in the way that you think in a big picture sense, but he's been outstanding and he's been consistent for them. Walk-off victory on Saturday, thanks to him. And you know, we've seen him hit for power, doubles, home runs. He already has more RBIs than he had last year, you know, in far fewer plate appearances. I mean, this is a guy who, to this point, we've seen hitting, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of sixth or seventh. I mean, I don't know how you're going to keep him that low in the lineup much longer if he continues to hit this way. I mean, he's looking like a guy that, you know, could be hitting third for you. You know, certainly could be hitting in the heart of the order for you. So he's been such, you know, he's taken such a big step forward. And I think for me, something that really jumped out over the weekend was with the Diamondbacks being in town is Corbin Carroll. I mean, great story last year, big time prospect, wins NL Rookie of the Year. He's been awful so far this year. In fact, if you look around baseball, you'll find quite a few guys in their sophomore year. You know, the proverbial sophomore jinx, you know, sophomore slump. There are a lot of guys around baseball that are doing that. But my goodness, between Gunnar Henderson, who's in his second full year in the majors, and Jordan Westberg in his second year, first full year in the majors, no sophomore slumps there. I mean, those guys have taken it to another level. So, you know, you see Corbin Carroll, who I still think is going to be a terrific player, but he's really, I mean, really struggling when you look at his numbers. And it reminds you that even the best, even the really good ones, even guys that you think are going to be great players, it's really difficult to do this. So for Westberg to do what he's done, and look, he's going to struggle at some point in time. You know, we talk about that. We talked about that with Craig Kimbrel, who's, you know, a guy who might be going to the Hall of Fame before it's all said and done. Everyone's going to struggle from time to time, but Westberg has just been so consistent for them. And I think if you kind of were going to brainstorm all the different things that you thought would go well, things that you had more of a question about, I didn't have doubts about him in terms of being an everyday player, but I didn't necessarily know if he could be this good this quickly. And you know, my thought for him was he could be like a rock solid, just everyday player for you moving forward. And
Well,
he's
that's why
playing
I
like an
said Rich
all-star right
Dower. So I
now.
just want to give, for all the old people out there, Rich Dower hit 336 in AAA. I had to go look this up. And I didn't know this about Rich Dower because, I mean, I was 8, 9 years old when he came up, and I was the fan at that point. Four hits and 39 at bats the first year they brought him up. The second year, he had one hit in 41 at bats. He was a three, th he won the International League batting title the year before. And couldn't figure out major league pitching the first 100 at bats. Went on to have a 10-year career. Never really hit with power. He had more power in the minor leagues than he ever did in the major leagues. But I saw him, and he was also a guy that could have been a third baseman, could have been a second baseman, could have been a shortstop. And I remembered when he came up, what a phenom he was because he was a first round draft pick. He was 24th overall. I have to go back and I didn't know this stuff off the top of my head. This team makes me research guys from before. Because John Harbaugh's not here anymore, and I don't have a press pass, and I can compare things when I want. Whenever I want to compare, I make comparisons because that's how we figure the world out. But nonetheless, I see in him this sort of quiet, steady guy that's never going to be the biggest star on this team for all the reasons we've mentioned. It's like Scottie Pippen, right? Like, there's not going to be a lot of oxygen for him as MVP or star, but he is settling in to be an all-star kind of player. In the middle of these other guys with maybe higher ceilings, I think you would say, than Jordan Westbrook. But to your point, if you took him in any other organization where all these phenoms aren't and where all these 1-1s and 1-2s aren't, he'd be a really good prospect in any other organization.
Yeah, and he was still a good prospect for the Orioles. It's not as though he wasn't in our top 10 list, for example, before he made his major league debut. But yeah, he wasn't necessarily getting a lot of love around baseball. You know, some publications had him as a top 100 fringe kind of guy like that. It's not as though he was off the radar entirely, but man, he's just been so good. And to the point that you just made, I'm starting to question whether we've sold him short in terms of his ceiling even. So yeah, there have been times where I've thought about him through the lens of being a J.J. Hardy kind of player, a Jonathan Scope kind of player, where, okay, those weren't guys that necessarily were perennial all-stars in the way that you thought of Adam Jones or Manny Machado, but they made some all-star teams and they were guys that were above average players. Now, you're hoping Westberg has more longevity than someone like Jonathan Scope, for example, who kind of, you know, his career flamed out way more quickly than I thought it would. But he's just been really good. And again, when you're seeing around baseball, and this is a point we, you and I have probably missed on more than we should have than really we taking some accountability here. Offense is down around baseball. I mean, let's think about that. Offense around baseball is down. Yet you see how this team hits the ball. And yeah, we can talk about Cedric Mullins, who's really struggling, or we can talk about Austin Hayes, who got off to a bad start. But by and large, this lineup, top to bottom, has been really good. And Westberg is a big reason why. I mean, he's, like I said, he's been one of their very best players. And the jump that he's taken from rookie year to year two, I mean, he just looks so much more comfortable at the plate, drives the ball. He's got a good approach. He's willing to go the other way. He's a right-handed hitter in Camden Yards, which used to be a great thing. Now it's not so great because of the big wall and left, but that hasn't prevented him from hitting for power. I mean,
we
he's
also
just
don't
been
hear much
really
from
good.
him, right? Like I ran into
The
BJ
quiet guy.
Surhoff last week, right? And BJ was a 1-1, so he's kind of a different cat. And by the way, Pathfinders for Autism, the good work he's doing. If you see Vince Fiducia out around town, tell him I said hello and congratulations on that. But and this is a good chance for me to plug because BJ participates in the Crab Derby, and the Crab Derby's this Wednesday. So we're going to be down at Lexington Market this week. I want to get the times out for everybody because we're going to run that piece this week. And I had Alicia on last Friday down at Fadley's, and we're going to be at Fadley's on Friday as well. It is Preakness week around here. Crab Derby is Thursday, excuse me, 1 to 4 on Thursday. Make sure I get that right, not Wednesday. I knew I was going to screw that up because I said Wednesday last week. It's Thursday this week. I know I got it on my calendar. Come on down and participate. BJ was the winner last year. He's a great crab racer. I'm going to be the MC this year. But the reason I bring BJ Surhoff up is I don't know any of these players. And again, my media pass is under review for whatever that's worth, and I have inquired. So I don't know any of these guys. I only know them through television and what they say and what Ben McDonald would say about a player or Jeff Arnold might say about a player or Melanie Newman or whatever. And the word on him is he's a gamer, intense, doesn't do a lot of talk. Like to your point, like you're around it. I would compare that to BJ Surhoff as far as pretty intense dude from the minute at the ballpark. Like I didn't know BJ well. I still don't know BJ well because he wasn't like a friendly dude at the locker hanging out at 4 o'clock. He was a guy like putting a bone on a bat and was like focused on like just wasn't that guy because he was a gamer. And I saw JJ Hardy as sort of that guy as well. When you mentioned their personalities, I only hear that through television these days. It seems to me he's a pretty focused fellow, this Jordan Westberg guy.
He's really focused. He's a nice kid. It's not as though like if you say hello to him, he's going to ignore you or anything like that. But he's on the quieter side. He's definitely his teammates will get on him because he hardly ever smiles. But it's just he's really focused and dialed in on what he does. He really cares about his craft. He's like I said, I think he's a good person. I mean, look, as media types, none of us get to know these guys
I feel the same
intimately
way about
well to really
BJ. I
make
didn't
too
talk
much
to him during his career.
judge on
He's
their
doing all this stuff
character.
with autism.
Sure,
I never, I,
sure.
he just was one of the more real serious cats around there.
Yeah.
And he wasn't as playful as other guys were in a person. And I hear that about Westberg. And I'm thinking, you don't see much about him here. He's not going to be beating on his chest saying, I'm better than this guy or like any of that,
Right.
especially on this team where, to your point, sort of eased in. There wasn't a sold out ballpark, and he's coming, and all this Jackson Holliday hype, and all the hype on Adley Rutschman. Henderson didn't have that kind of hype, but is far superseded whatever the hype of the other guys or Matt Wieters before that or any of these guys. There really is an oxygen point for bringing 20, 22, 23 year old kids up who I just mentioned Rich Dower, 5 for 100, his first plate appearances over 2 seasons. It's really hard to do as Jackson Holliday is finding out right now, as Colton Cowser would tell you, as any of these guys would, that when you settle in and you have Luke Jones on a Monday morning in May talking about him being the second best player on a team with a lot of really good players, that is something that I don't know that you would have, you and I were running around Sarasota 6 weeks ago. You would have said, I think Jordan Westberg's going to have breakout and he's going to be the, it wouldn't have been crazy based on everything you've just said about him, that in any other organization, he would be the bright shining guy. Here, he's like number 4, 5 if you count Holiday.
Yeah, I mean it really, I mean it speaks to how much talent they have, but I think what's interesting about him, now obviously he was drafted out of college. He's 25. He turned 25 I think back in February. So, you don't look at him in the same way that you look at, Gunnar's not quite 23 years old yet. Jackson Holliday of course is 20. So when you talk about these guys that are drafted out of high school, you always think about the word ceiling, right? You think about the guys that have the higher ceiling when they're younger, and understandably so. But I think what's interesting about Westbrook that kind of gets lost in the wash, as I mentioned, he hit at every level. He hit for power at every level. He was primarily a shortstop, but obviously showed an aptitude to be able to play third, to be able to play second, as he's doing for them now. But you go back to the early 2021, because 20 was the pandemic year. They were at the alternate site in Bowie. You know, they had some of their best prospects there, but the minor league season had been shelved that year because of COVID. But you go back to early 2021. So Nestor, we're only talking 3 years ago. It's not like that's that long ago. At that point in time, you had Gunnar Henderson, who by that point was on the radar in terms of, hey, this kid they drafted out of high school in 19, you know, he's got a chance to be really good. But at that point, Jordan Westberg was viewed through a lens of, he was the guy who had the higher floor. He was probably the safer bet at that point than Gunnar Henderson. And they were both shortstop, third base type, left field and left side of the infield kind of guys. But as Gunnar ascended and his star started to really become elevated in terms of Baseball America and MLB Pipeline and all the minor league, you know, minor league baseball publications and all the minor league pundits, there was this sense still with Westberg that, okay, he's not going to have that kind of ceiling, but this guy's just been rock solid at every level. And it was interesting. If you look at when those guys were promoted until Gunnar made it to the majors in September of 22, those two had kind of been neck and neck. If you look at when they were promoted, it was within a couple weeks of each other, even though Westberg's older and was a college hitter. But you know, you kind of think about 3 years ago, if someone had asked you then, who was the safer prospect, Jordan Westberg or Gunnar Henderson? They would have said Jordan Westberg. And Gunnar has surpassed him, understandably so, rightly so. Gunnar's the better player now. He's the best player on this team. He might be the best player in the American League, other than maybe Juan Soto, you know, if you want to start splitting hairs.
He sucks, Juan Soto. I just got to say that. I told him that when he came
I know
back
in Baltimore we think that, but he is still a really good player, whether people like him or not. But I mean, Westberg, like I said, I thought he would take a step forward. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I thought he was going to, you know, have a 715 OPS like he had last year. He hit 260. I mean, he was fine last year. He wasn't bad, but it was more, you know, just run of the mill, solid.
Wasn't wow. It was, yeah, oh, he's amazing.
Exactly.
That's why I said Rich Dower. Rich Dower's right. Never wow. Like right. Literally,
so,
right?
So I thought he would hit for more power, but what we're seeing, I mean, with the doubles, you know, just the consistency. I mean, he's hitting 300. I think if you look at his splits, you know, if you broke down his season by 7 to 10 day increments, I think they would all look very similar. You wouldn't have too many times where he was, you know, I don't think he's had a 3 for 30 this year, for example, whereas you could say that about a lot, even some of their best players, you know, because that's how it works. And by the way, Westberg will probably have that at some point in time, but he has just been so consistent, so productive, hitting for extra base hit, you know, hitting for power, coming up in the clutch, you know, at a walk-off hit on Saturday. He's just been so good for them. And
he's gonna hit
when you have guys
too, right?
Like that to support, right. I mean, he's on pace to hit 24, 25 home runs at this point. Also with 35 doubles. I mean, you talk about a guy who's at 60 plus extra base hits. I mean, that's a really valuable player, especially if that guy plays good defense. So, I mean, he's, like I said, do I think he's going to make the All-Star team? Probably not, because we know how that kind of works if you're not a starter. But he has All-Star credentials in terms of how he's playing the game right now. I mean, with the power, with the defense. I mean, the fact that he can play two different spots where you feel good about the defense. I mean, he's just, I can't say enough about how impressed I've been by him. And that's with a team that has an all-star catcher and an MVP candidate at shortstop and a rookie of the year candidate in Colton Cowser, even though he's cooled off a little bit, still the numbers overall have been great. And you go down the list of former all-stars on this roster, a former Cy Young Award winner at leading the rotation. I mean, they've got a lot of high-profile players for being a young team, but Westberg he's earning his flowers. He's earning some real attention around baseball, and I think teams come in, and I've even seen a couple, you know, I typically don't go to the opposing manager's press conference, but I've seen some comments here and there over the course of a series where they'll say, man, that Westberg guy's good. I mean, everyone talks about Gunnar and Adley, and understandably so, but a lot of these teams are seeing Jordan Westberg burn them. So, I mean, he's just been so good for them. And as I've said, you know, we see him most nights hitting, you know, sixth, seventh. At some point in time, you might have to, you know, he might be forcing his way to hitting third or fourth or fifth. I mean, he's just been that good. And it's such a testament to the work he's put in. When you see other second-year players around the league scuffling, like Corbin Carroll, for example, a tremendous talent, to see what Westberg's done in year two, not just taking a step forward, but a giant leap forward. It's been really impressive.
Well, and that speaks to him being 25 years old and not 20 years old.
True.
Dare I say, if Gunnar Henderson went and played college ball, or if Jackson Holiday played college ball, I mean, you're laughing, but like, that was an option for those guys. And certainly when you're going to be a 1-1 as a high school prospect, you go. But to think about how good they are, and to see a guy like Westbrook or other guys that went the traditional route of going to college and you played a couple years of college ball at the very least, to look at the difference between their trajectory to the big leagues and how we feel about them as a 25-year-old, very good ball player, star, superstar, you know, whatever you would want to call them, why the Gunnar Hendersons of the world, I don't say slipped through the cracks, but anybody could have had him at, you know, at that point, and didn't see him as this guy. They saw him as a, well, he'd be a really good college player, and imagine what a prospect he'd be if he went to Oklahoma State and played 2 years or whatever. A lot of these guys don't have to do that, and some guys do. And we always weigh a little differently when you went to college, you know? Yeah, and more is expected of you quicker, too.
Yeah, you expect a quicker development, but generally speaking, the floor isn't regarded as being quite as high. But, I mean, you said it with Gunnar Henderson. I mean, there were very real questions of whether the Orioles were going to sign him. I mean, he was going to go play college baseball in the SEC and all of that, and they signed him. And he's really, you know, he's been the guy in – with no disrespect to Rutschman or any of these other guys that were drafted in the top five overall, those are the kind of guys that should make it, right? If they don't make it, then you're asking
top five overall as a college player.
Regardless,
you're saying, as a college player.
No, I mean, just as an overall pick, as a top five overall pick, you know, I mean, those guys should make it. If they don't make it, then that's a failure in some way, you know, unless that guy just ends up being a total, you know, jerk, you know, something about him that fell through the cracks, which there have been examples of that in baseball history of top five picks, that the character issues and things of that nature. But in the case of Gunnar, I mean, he's really, you know, and Mike Elias a couple years ago even referred to him as kind of the flagship example of their player development. You know, certainly he had raw tools. Certainly he had ability. No one is suggesting that if another team had drafted Gunnar Henderson, that he wouldn't make it to the major leagues. But with him developing as quickly as he did and them, you know, tweaking his swing and different things about, you know, that goes into their player development, you know, especially for a young player, for him to have the success that he had in the midst of losing his first full minor league season because of COVID, and him being relegated to being at the alternate site at Bowie and instructional league camp in Sarasota that fall of 2020, for him to become what he's become as quickly as he has, it is such a great testament to what they do player development wise. And look, they have plenty of those stories now, right? I mean, all kinds of guys and not even just prospects, but relievers that they've fixed and tweaked, like Yennier Cano, for example, you know, Felix Bautista, you know, not that Bautista hadn't, you know, gotten on the radar by the time that the new regime, you know, was already cooking.
But look at Dean Kramer, who's rounded into being a nice starter. And
I mean, 3 years ago, Dean Kramer had a 7 ERA and was starting to look like, oh man, that Manny Machado trade is going to be a total bust. Well, you know, Kramer's been solid. You know, even on Sunday, his final line was his defense let him down. You know, would have been better than what it was on
Where's
Sunday.
Where's that outfielder we got in that deal? Where's he?
Oh, Yusniel Diaz. He is actually back with the Dodgers. But okay. Last I saw, he's still in Double A. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that's a long time ago.
Talk about other teams' prospects versus ours, and like every Manny Alexander I go back to or Jim Fuller I go back to, there's always a hit and a miss somewhere along the line. And not lately, not with Mike Elias, not here. And that is your point, is that we're talking about a sort of a B-list prospect with sort of an A-list reputation becoming maybe an all-star right before our eyes in Westbrook.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to go back to a term that you and I talked about a lot when Mike Elias and Sig Meidel arrived: growth mindset. Yes, these guys need to have a baseline of talent, right? They can't take you or me and make us into major league ball players. I mean, no matter how great our growth mindset might be, but guys that have a baseline amount of talent, and also you scout the individual, you scout the human being, you scout the character traits, and you have guys that want to be great. And these Jordan Westberg fits into that group. I mean, that's the guy who works. He's a gamer. He's intense. He's a nice kid. Believe me, he seems like a really nice kid. His teammates really like him. They get on him that he doesn't smile enough just because he takes himself seriously as far as what he does. But man, he's making himself into a heck of a ball player. But like I said, you saw this at every level. That's why last year when he didn't hit for a lot of power, I didn't know this for sure. You never know it for sure because the major leagues, Triple A to the majors, is the biggest jump in pro sports. Yeah, maybe even more so now than it ever used to be. And Jackson Holliday is a great example of this, where sometimes it takes some time. Colton Cowser, it took some time. Gunnar, at this point last year, we forget Gunnar was hitting about 175 a calendar year ago. And since then, it has become a rookie of the year and now an MVP candidate. So it does take some time and it is challenging. And there is no guarantee. Corbin Carroll is a great example of that. Was rookie of the year last year. And this year, he's been woeful so far. And, he'll probably figure it out, but he hasn't to this point in 2024. So for Westberg to do what he's done, for it to be a guy that was not a top five overall pick, like Gunnar Henderson, who wasn't a, also wasn't a top five overall pick. When you're finding guys like that, either in, a sandwich pick in the case of Westberg, that in between first and second round pick, or in the case of Gunnar Henderson, who was a second round pick, and you're developing those guys into either MVP candidate in Gunnar's case or an all-star caliber player in Westberg, at least how he's looking so far this year, then man, it speaks so highly to the individuals that you draft and the work that you're doing with them. And that's where it's so exciting to see what the Orioles are doing. And it's where when you see someone like Kobe Mayo putting up the numbers he's putting up at Triple A, you're excited to see him at some point here in the not too distant future as well. And other guys that are progressing through the minor leagues. So I mean, it's just we talk about this all the time and we sound like broken records, but it just speaks so highly to their player development that they have done the hit rate that they've had with their draft picks, not just with the first round guys, but even with later round guys. I mean, it's so impressive. It's not the way it typically works. Even some of the most, the biggest success stories of rebuilding teams over the last 15 to 20 years, you look at their hit rate draft wise compared to the Orioles, and look, it's still an open, some of these Jordan Westberg could.
Well, like the Cubs had a lot of fun a decade ago. They only won once, right?
Yeah.
Like some of these teams have sort of hit the lottery on, oh my God, they got Rizzo and Ben Sherbert. Like you go through the players and you say, okay, and it lasts a minute to our point. Ruben Splash is squirting everybody and we're having a good time. But 4 years from now, team won't look like this. I mean, this is as good as it gets comprised and so good that guys don't have room. And I guess, look, to move it to a different place, Cedric Mullins and how far we go, because we talked a lot about pitching and a lot about how much rope you give a veteran guy, an all-star, a team guy, an imported guy for $13 million a year based on his salary. Cedric Mullins and Hayes, I'll lump them together, and I would throw Mountcastle and Santander into that group as well. They were here before any of this mess started. They were part of the 100-loss teams. They were part of the madness. They had to figure their lumps out without 35,000 people and new ownership and expectations of winning. Ryan Ripken famously tells the Cedric Mullins story about going down and him being there at the time. And, Ryan Ripken's interviewing people, and Cedric Mullins is going to All-Star games now. And Mullins could have failed several times. This isn't new to him, the struggle, but certainly a different situation when footsteps are everywhere in the outfield, including maybe from Austin Hayes.
Yeah, I think with Mullins, I mean, for me, I wouldn't be nearly as concerned if it weren't for the fact that he really struggled the second half of last year. And look, I know from even talking to him moments after they were swept in Texas back in October, and he held court with the media. I chatted with him a few moments after, the scrum, and I asked him how he was feeling, and this was off camera, but he didn't shy away from me. He said, I'm banged up. He played through a lot last year, and he really struggled in the second half with the bat. I think there was a lot of hope that he was going to come out, in spring training and be healthy and look more like the guy. Maybe not be 30-30 again. 2021, that was a career year for him. That's a lot. I mean, no one else had done that in Orioles history at that point in time. Although Gunnar Henderson looks like he's got a chance to be that kind of guy if he wants to steal that many bases. But, he got off to the 4-for-28 start. He's kind of had three seasons already. He started 4-for-28. Then he had that. He had like a nine-game stretch against the Red Sox, Milwaukee, and Minnesota. Remember, he hit the walk-off home run against the Twins. He was 11 for 30 with, like five extra base hits over that nine-game stretch. And you thought, okay, he's getting his legs. He's looking good. OPS was up to like 850 at that point. Since that walk-off home run against the Twins, 8 for 62, two extra base hits, only four walks. He's batting 129. He's only slugging 194. His defense has been terrific. His defense continues to make him someone that even when he's struggling with the bat, he still has value going out there. And that's where I think you saw over the weekend where Hyde gave him a couple days off. They had Heston Kjerstad in left field on Saturday. That expansive left field at Camden Yards that you need kind of basically need a center fielder playing left field also. That's not ideal. They had O'Hearn playing left field on Sunday, but because they moved Couser to center each of those games. And I'm okay with Couser in center field, but those left field options aren't great right now. So that's where I think things become a little more interesting. If Mullins is going to continue to struggle, Hayes is going to come back. He's wrapping up. I assume he's wrapping up. His stint at Double A Bowie with some rehab at bats. Hit a home run. Looks like he swung the bat pretty well there. Looks like he's healthy with the calf. I do wonder, and I do kind of, I'm interested to see what the outfield picture looks like here. Moving,
Well, you wanted a
not
rotation
moving
all
forward.
along. You didn't want three guys to begin with.
I think in the case of the three veteran incumbents and Colton Cowser, you have four guys that at this point, and Cowser might become this guy, right? I mean, he had a stretch where he was the best player on the team for 2 weeks. I mean, he was unbelievable. One player of the week, all of that.
I saw all the
But
cows.
until, yeah, right. You still hear all the moves, right? But, until he becomes a little more consistent, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way, just the natural evolution and development of a young ball player. I see four guys there that I don't see there any reason for any of them. And Couser would be the first one if I was going to pick one, but I don't see a reason for any of those guys to have to play 155 games a year. I think if you rest them and rotate and everyone sits once a week and, some guys DH, different things like
Give you a
that.
bat off the bench late?
There's that. I think you keep all of them. You increase the odds of keeping them fresh and healthy for 162. Right. So there's a way to do it where, and again, for me right now, Couser is still going to be my everyday left fielder. Santander is still going to be my everyday right fielder. DH is on occasion. You know what I mean by that. But I'm curious right now, though, with Mullins struggling the way he is and with Hayes coming back, and you want to try to get Hayes going. I don't think he's going to be activated and just relegated to the bench. It's kind of the Craig Kimbrell thing all over again. You don't want to just bury
Well,
him.
you
You
just
hope
said
he's
to
going
me
to
you
get
want
going.
Couser playing every day, right? So if you want Couser playing every day, then you want Hayes not playing a lot right now.
This is going to depend. It might be that for the time being, and again, this is always all of these plans are temporary until they become permanent, right? I mean, I'm not, Couser
And
has
there's
cooled off
permanence and
some.
change every minute of every day, right? Like literally.
But I think you look at where Mullins is right now with the way he struggled, and he's really, really struggled against left-handed pitching. I do wonder if when Hayes is activated, whether it's for this series or, whenever it's, I assume in the near future, might have already been activated by the time someone's listening to us talk right now. But I do wonder if maybe you see Hayes and Mullins form a little bit of a platoon for the time being. Maybe that's what we see, and maybe that's a way to try to get both of them going. Hayes facing some left-handed pitching, and Mullins maybe not facing lefties, and you're hoping maybe get them off their feet a little bit. Both guys have had either injuries or times where they've worn down the last couple years. Maybe we see some of that. I don't know. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and say that I know better than Brandon Hyde or Mike Elias, but I see guys that, in the case of Hayes, we saw it before he got hurt. And in the case of Mullins, it's, been, I mean, that walk-off against Minnesota was almost a month ago. This has been a month where he's really, really struggled. So, I do wonder if maybe those two guys, you kind of mix and match them a little bit. And, you know, I don't know if that means Hayes plays center or Kowser goes to center on those days and Hayes stays in left, you know, and, you know, you can do it. You know, it doesn't have to be a straight platoon in center field. But, you know, I'll be interested to see how that works out because Mullins is really struggling. And for Brandon Hyde to say what he said over the weekend, which his quote was, he's pressing a lot. You know, he said that he's really pressing a lot. And we've seen it. You know, we've seen the examples of him striking out or popping up and he slams the bat down. You know, he's frustrated. I mean, he's really frustrated.
Well, the footsteps of taking my bats away, taking my job away. You know, he and Hayes and Santander and Mount.
Everyone on this roster.
Those footsteps, right?
I mean, at this point, everyone on this roster, I guess other than, you know, I mean, James McCann's no threat to Adley.
Well, to your point, Mateo and Urias are always on borrowed time, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think all these guys, they see what's at Norfolk. They see what's at the system. They see what might be on the bench waiting to take their place. I mean,
and they see this team might win the World Series without them, whoever they are.
Yeah. Well, and since you brought it up, and this was the last point, I didn't want to belabor this point, but, you know, Jorge Mateo, look at how he's responded to his role changing since this time last year. This time last year, remember, he had a phenomenal April. Was great. One of the best players in baseball in April. Go back and look at his numbers. They were fantastic. And he really, really struggled to the point where they stopped playing him every day. And Gunnar moved the shortstop. And obviously, Gunnar was rookie of the year and great player, deserved to play every day, played so well at shortstop where you said, you know what? We want to play this kid at shortstop and not third base because he's so good there. So Mateo, guys like me were questioning why he was even still on the roster. They stuck with him. He understood. He read the room. He knew he wasn't going to be the starting shortstop anymore. So what did he do? He worked at second base and he learned to become more versatile and play more second base. And, you know, it hasn't been perfect there, but he's made some nice plays there. He's shown an aptitude that he can be a second baseman. Not in the big picture sense that he's going to start because Jackson Holliday is going to be back.
But
at
he
some
might be
point.
A starting second baseman of the Brewers 2 years.
I mean,
now,
maybe
$8 million a year.
He might be, but in the meantime, they have a need right now because Holliday needed to go back to the minors and make an adjustment. I think Brandon Hyde very much thought this was going to be Mateo playing at second base against left-handed starters and Arias playing at third with Westberg moving to second against right-handed starters. But Mateo's the one who's answered the bell and has done a nice job and has swung the bat pretty well. And Arias has not. I mean, Arias is, he hasn't been playable. I mean, he's been that bad offensively that it's been a tough time playing him. And then even on Sunday when he gets a start, he throws wide to the plate and costs them a run. Actually cost them a couple runs in that inning. You know, it didn't help out Dean Kramer. So, you know, we're seeing more and more that Mateo's playing, becoming more of an everyday player at second base for the time being. You know, once Jackson Holliday, they deem him ready, it's going to be Holliday. But in the meantime, Mateo, to me, has very clearly in the pecking order moved himself ahead of Arias, where once that day comes, Ramon Arias might not have a job anymore. You know, that might be his roster spot, you know, that gets taken at that point in time. Long way to go between now and whenever that happens, and you can always turn it around. But the point is, with all these different incumbents, all these guys that were part of the turnaround, you know, there's an affinity for them. You know, whether you're talking about Mullins, Hayes, Mountcastle, go down the list of guys that were on that 110 lost terrible team from 3 years ago. But they also understand that there are young guys coming and gunning for their job. And they know that they're not all going to be here forever. So there is pressure. You know, that absolutely there's pressure. Good pressure, you hope, but it's pressure nonetheless. So it's interesting to see someone like Mateo. He's answered the call. I give him credit. I mean, he's a guy that last August I was asking why he was on this roster. You're really going to carry this guy just to have a pinch runner in the playoffs on your postseason roster? But he's rebounded and he's done a nice job and he's played, you know, pretty solid second base. And, you know, the speed has always been there. So he always has that going for
him.
Well,
unlike
him,
what's happened to Mullins or Hayes,
pretty well
who have
overall.
Multiple positions as well, the amount of at-bats, when Gunnar Henderson takes your job, it's for 162, right? Like, you know, you're last year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was over for Mateo as a shortstop the minute Gunnar Henderson came and stuck. And it was over. There is no more job there anymore. To your point, the outfield situation, a little more fluid to move guys around and have a position for even O'Hearn to take the glove for a day, even though you don't want him to do that.
Yeah, and keep in mind the outfield. There's the contractual financial part of this where Santander's in a contract year. Mullins and Hayes will be in a contract year next year. Yeah, they have guys that are waiting at Triple A. They have Heston Kerstad, who's in the majors and still can't get in the lineup on any consistent basis. So inevitably, there's going to be some change there. I think we're all seeing at this point that of their three veteran outfielders that have been the incumbents, you know, the guys that have been established outfielders for the last 3 or 4 years at the major league level, they're not all getting extensions. I don't know if any of them are getting extensions, right? I mean, if I had to bet all three or none of them, I certainly am saying none. If I had to bet one or none of them, I might be betting none at this point. But you know, that there's part of that. But in the case of Mateo, at the very least, you have someone who is carving out a role for himself, at least as a nice bench piece who can play some second base. You know, he can play shortstop if Gunnar tweaks his ankle or needs a day off or is sick. And you know, he is going to be able to run for you. So that's a valuable bench player right there. So he's done a nice job adjusting to the circumstances changing at the major league level. And just wanted to give him his due, because I think he's been a nice, you know, I don't want to say a shock, but I think he's been a nice little pleasant surprise for them, especially on the heels of things not working out with Holiday in his first run in the majors.
All right, Luke Jones will be there all week long. Orioles taking on the Blue Jays for a couple Thursday off. Alibi breakfast. We're going to be racing crabs down at Lexington Market on Thursday with BJ Surhoff and a whole bunch of other folks. Come on down, say hello. On Friday, we're going to be doing the show 2 until 5, and we're running ponies on Saturday here. Bob Baffert's going to be stopping by this week. Also, Donna Brothers is going to be here talking about the race in Mystic Dan. I'm bringing in Frank Vespi, a whole bunch of racing people. I'm going to be at the post position draw on Monday, so we'll have all of that ahead. But baseball all week long. Mariners in town this weekend as well. Luke's monitoring football. Football schedule? Yes.
Schedule coming out. Yes, coming out Wednesday. You want to be on the text service, and we'll break it down and see when the Ravens are playing in primetime. You figure plenty of primetime games.
Freaking
we'll see
this week
when
they
exactly
don't have a schedule yet. What are they doing?
I know, right? Pushing it back further and further, right? Gotta make,
and you wonder gotta make why everything. I used all my points to go to Spokane instead of saving them up to see the Chargers in Inglewood. You know what I mean? Like, so I was chasing the Northern Lights, and when I get it, I slept on the flight home on Sunday because I'm just dog ass, and it's Preakness week, and it's crazy around here, and Hart and Cheap Trick, the charisma of Rick Nielsen, the magnitude, magnetism, excuse me, of Robin Zander will be together this week. But I've written 80% of my Northern Lights piece. Most of it's just humorous, to be honest with you, but there will be a columnist, special non-sports columnist about the world's greatest natural phenomenon that was available to, by the way, here's one for you, Lucas. You met one of my favorite science teachers, Mr. George Shulin, who was the baseball coach at Dundalk High School. And you and George hit it off like as famously as I thought you would, given your baseball background. And yeah, George told us stories about cutting school and going to the 66 World Series. It was phenomenal. I'm in Spokane, and I'm at the Canadian border at the highest point. Do you know Spokane's further north than Portland, Maine? It's 200 miles further north than Minneapolis. Right. It's north, because I was on the phone with Hagen. I was headed to Minneapolis on Saturday until he told me it was cloudy. So I mean, at least in Minneapolis, I could have gone to Prince's house or something. But we had a good time in Spokane. All 12 hours we were there. But like George Shulin, apparently, and I need to get him back on the show, went to Cumberland on Saturday night and saw the Northern Lights. And he's a science teacher, so he knows what the hell's going on up there. All I know is, oh my, wow, ooh, ah. He's like, well, that's the polar vortex of the magnetism of the geo. So I got to get George on. Any of you saw the Northern Lights? Don't rub it. Well, rub it in. Send me pictures. I want to see the pictures. It is my ultimate bucket list. It's even moved ahead of like Wimbledon and meeting Reggie Jackson again and things like that. But I'll be writing about it this week. It'll be humorous because I've seen the Northern Lights, but only in pictures. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Luke and I got you covered on sports, text, NFL schedule, and Preakness, because we're Baltimore positive.